From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made across 1.2 miles of riverfront in Alexandria, Virginia. For 20 years, residents and urban planners had a vision for revitalizing the area, which was disconnected from the city and compromised by previous industrial use. The space was rife with potential, so the question became, what was the best way to honor the city's history, culture, and environmental needs in the redesign? Olin, the landscape architecture firm hired for the project, worked directly with Alexandrians to shape the space. The plan creates outdoor rooms along the Potomac River, linked by a pedestrian promenade. The design is currently still in progress, but when you look at renderings of the space, you may think, could this be Rochester? Could we do this? The Community Design Center's annual Reshaping Rochester series brings renowned urban planners, designers, and architects to town to share their expertise. Part of the goal is to explore what Rochester can learn from other cities. Not everything can be taken out directly and plopped right down here in Rochester, but there's so much we can learn. And now as our city undergoes its Rock the Riverway project, a major focus is on waterfront development and how to make the river a more integral part of urban design. Could Rochester essentially be the next Alexandria? Our guest for the hour can help us answer that question. Richard Newton is a partner at Olin. He's also familiar with Rochester, having offered his expertise in development at Charles Carroll Park downtown. He'll be back in town next week for a presentation as part of the Reshaping Rochester series. But first, he's our guest on Connections. Richard, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Very well. Very well.
It's also great to have Maria Fergiuelli here, Executive Director of the Community Design Center. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Aaron.
Well, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the subject of what draws people to water. What works in some places may not perfectly work in others, but I think we've got lessons to learn. What do you want people to know about what's happening next Wednesday, right? Is it a week from today, Wednesday? Oh, it is today, Wednesday.
Week from today. Yeah. Well, we're hoping everybody will come out. The lectures are free and open to the public. And we're really looking forward to an informative and inspiring presentation by Richard. We've for many, many years have not paid much attention to our river, so we know that it can be a great tool for catalytic change in our community, so we're looking forward to learning more about how that might happen.
Richard, when's the first time you were introduced to Rochester?
My connection, it strangely goes back some way. My father-in-law studied at Strong Memorial. My sister-in-law was born in Rochester, and my son, out of all the places he could have chosen, elected to study at the University of Rochester. So I've been spending the past years, he graduated last year, so I've been spending the past 4 years traveling up and down to Rochester to see him, and he had a wonderful, enjoyable experience.
And so, of course, you've also done work with Charles Carroll Park. So what were your impressions of how Rochester was utilizing its river and water assets? You know, maybe if you go back several years, you come here, you look around, you see maybe what's happening or what's not happening. What are your impressions at the time?
Well, I think as in so many cities, there has been this gradual, from the sort of 19th century, this kind of use of the riverfront as a commercial corridor. It's really been where people have turned their back on the river, and the city actually exists within the urban fabric. And gradually, cities have realized the great potential and value of the waterfronts. And I think that certainly Rochester is an example of turning its back on the river. But gradually, the Rock the Riverway project and what we're working on with Charles Carroll Park are really starting to revalue the river as an incredible environmentally and socially important resource for the regeneration of the city as a whole.
What's the big challenge that maybe planners, the city itself, and those who want to see our waterfront work, what are the challenges here? Because this is not sort of geographically and in terms of landscape exactly the same as any other city. There is a gorge and a big waterfall. There's different ways to access it, but there's also different barriers at times. What do you see the challenges being, Richard?
Well, I think one of the major challenges for us is very much as you talk about, it's that trying to create a place that, as it were, captures the needs and aspirations of the city now and anticipates the future uses. We see riverfronts very differently nowadays than we did historically. And I think each city has a, as it were, a sort of DNA that one needs to draw on, and that's about how you talk to people's understanding their sort of aspirations for the future. And certainly, I was fascinated that originally in the 1960s, there was a plan for a performing arts center on Charles Carroll Park, which of course was one of the first pieces of land that sowed the seed for the present city, with Charles Carroll and Nathaniel Rochester buying that plat of land at the corner of the Genesee and Main Street.
And so, Maria, when you look at the waterfront, do you think that Rochester is a place where there will never be a single central point, focal point, because we've got a lot of land and a lot of waterfront access? Can we make multiple sort of featured places, or do you really need one sort of focalized effort to kind of feature the waterfront?
No, I think we're very lucky because in all cases, our greatest challenges can also be our best assets. So the fact that we have so many diverse types of experiences with the water, this dramatic waterfall, which I can't even name another city that I know of that has a wonderful, large waterfall in the center city. The fact that there might be opportunities for access down past the waterfall, where there's some land and some places where the water could be slowed down and create some interesting features. And the fact that around Cornhill and going south, we can get to the canal and there's other recreational activities. So we have the opportunity, I think, to really create different types of experiences in different locations, which is a great asset.
So listeners, as we go throughout this hour, we're going to talk about Rochester. We're going to talk about what has worked in other places. And if you've got questions or comments, things you'd like to see, or maybe thoughts on redesign ideas for Rochester's waterfront, you can call the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. We are at a point, and I'll start with Maria on this. I would like both of our guests to weigh in. We're at a point now where there does seem to be more of an effort to create a comprehensive plan, an overarching, whether it's a theme or a kind of a larger vision. And before the hour began, Maria and I were talking about, the difference between being really hyper-specific to one site, one place, versus larger systems, larger ideas. And I will not name the place, but I was talking to Maria about a local village where I'm sure somebody thought, well, we don't have enough fast food nearby. So they put a Taco Bell. But it turned out the place they put a Taco Bell was right on this historic strip, not far from the waterfront. And I thought, did anybody think about how this fits or doesn't fit? It's just the worst fit. So that was an example of, well, this land's open, we could use it, as opposed to saying, well, how do we work in a lot of different elements here? That's one small example of what can happen if you're not sort of thinking bigger picture. Are we seeing more big picture thinking in Rochester right now, Maria?
Yes, I think so. The creation or the completion of the LWRP, was the report about lake and waterfront development, helped create, I think, the framework for a larger vision. So there's still room in that to allow for site-specific explorations and engagement with the community to create specific projects, but it does kind of lay out some opportunities along the river with a larger vision in mind. But in general, yes, we used to be a community, and like many other communities, that were just happy to have any kind of development. We thought any development is good development. And I think one of the things that we're learning is to be a really interesting place that is attracting talent, you have to be much, much more intentional about the way you create space. And so you can't just say, I'll let you do this here and somebody else can propose something else somewhere else, and not have the two have some relationship to a larger plan.
It can be hard to say no, though, can it, Maria? I mean, imagine you are a village, you're looking for tax revenue, you're looking for, economic development or some even entry-level jobs, and Taco Bell wants to go there. It's hard to say no sometimes when, you're looking at your books at the end of the year.
Right. And sometimes it's, if you have that larger plan, it could really help inform decision making. Maybe you don't say no to the Taco Bell, but you don't say yes to that location. You can say, no, we've designated this other space, which we feel this would be more appropriate and would contribute in a better way to our community.
So, Richard, how do we look at, as we try to figure out what's going to happen next in Rochester, we're looking at Rock the Riverway. How do we, as sort of non-experts, evaluate whether the decision-making is taking into account these big pictures? What are we looking for?
Well, I think one of the wonderful things about Rock the Riverway is the principle of trying to create continuous access along the whole of the edge of it, so that you can actually experience all the different conditions of the river from the falls down to the wonderful Olmsted Park, down to the University of Rochester, etc. So this sort of notion that the river has as much diversity in its edge condition as indeed the people that live in a city, but as importantly, there are people that live on the other side. There's an urban fabric. There are various communities, whether they be retail, commercial, residential. And so each of those has a different relationship to the river itself. So it's a combination of many factors that both respond to the condition of the river, allow opportunities for people that live or work or recreate on beside the river. So that bringing those together, along with an environmental sensitivity to issues of resiliency and sustainability, all come together to make a particular unique place.
And yet, Richard, I want to ask you what I've asked a number of guests about this question, because, you know, I'm working here in High Falls. This is one of my favorite parts of Rochester. The Pontarren Bridge is probably my favorite place in Rochester, looking at the falls. And yet every time I'm out there, and I'm probably going to go out there as soon as the show ends on this beautiful first day of spring, every time I'm there, I'm wondering, why do so few people in our region have the experience of ever having been on this pedestrian bridge? Why have we not been able to make High Falls work? You know, Richard, we go back to the early 2000s and Mayor Bill Johnson's administration. They really thought, you know, if we just maybe offer some tax incentives, we can make a district, we can make an entertainment district or maybe a nightclub district, something happening, because it makes sense. You've got beautiful streets, you've got the falls. They haven't been able to make that happen. And I'm curious to know if, you know, sort of as an outsider who now knows the city pretty well, if you look at this particular part of it and say, boy, that's a surprise that you've got this amazing waterfall and you just sort of haven't been able to do a whole lot with that area. I mean, is there a single reason that stands out to you or any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that, I mean, the kind of dumb response is that if there was a simple answer, it would have been.
Probably so.
I think the one thing about working as a landscape architect in urban conditions, you realize stuff takes a long time. I've got projects that have been 10, 15 years in the making, and it takes a lot of political will. It takes the right economy. It takes a whole series of people coming together. And I think you're seeing that in Rochester now with Rock the Riverway, with the Main Street work. And I've only been, as I say, been there for 4 or 5 years. But I think that I moved to Philadelphia 30 years ago, and Philadelphia is such a very different city now than it was when I first arrived. So these things take time, and one has to have commitment and build consensus.
Maria?
Yes, and I think it's important to understand that connectedness is so critically important. So one of the biggest things that keeps people from exploring High Falls is this tremendous barrier that we have with the roadway, with the railroad tracks. And so I think that makes it really hard to artificially create a place when it's not easy to access. I think the recognizing the value of our historic center of the city was really critically important. But the fact that there weren't any residents living here, there was really nobody that would support whatever might be created here. So I think it kind of reflects back on the need to be more aware of citizen engagement and understanding perhaps what are the components that are necessary before we try to put these investments into certain places.
I'm going to start with some of your phone calls. I will say, I'm very curious to see how successful Rock the Riverway becomes, because listeners, if you haven't been to some of these locations, you have a part of essentially the waterfront, near the waterfront in Rochester, in Turning Point Park, that looks like Low Country Carolina. You have here in High Falls, just the little cobbled streets that lead out to the Pontarren looks like sort of old Europe. It's really remarkable, some of these little stretches. Yet the mission now to sort of kind of create a comprehensive vision, it's important. We'll see. Richard in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Richard.
Hello. Cornhill, wow, pretty much the same story as High Falls. About 10 years ago, when Cornhill Landing was being built by Mark IV, the state and the city invested in tremendous waterfront improvements. You can actually take Main Street to Broad or Court and get on that system and walk all the way down to the U of R. And we have boat docks, and hardly anybody ever docks on them, but it connects to the whole canal system. No dams in the way. We've had a tour boat, but it basically had to relocate its principal embarkation point to the village of Pittsford because there weren't enough takers here in downtown Rochester. So for the hundreds of people who live in Cornhill, there's a real amenity there that they appreciate, but I don't see the downtown having taken advantage of this wonderful waterfront walkway and jogging and bike trail and public open spaces along it, amphitheaters that were created, which never get any concerts or any use. It's awfully close to downtown.
Yeah.
I can't understand why the city hasn't taken better advantage of it.
Richard, thank you. Maria, what do you think?
Well, we did do a community design shred in Cornhill years ago. I think it's going on maybe 7 or 8 years ago now. And one of the primary things that was identified by the residents in the community was their lack of access to the river, despite their proximity. So proximity doesn't always make something easy to get to. At that time, I believe the roadway exchange was very, very broad, 4 lanes and heavy traffic. And so that's one of the primary things that was identified by the community was wanting to create access. And that's how this removal of the river wall and Cornhill and the west side of the river started to come about. So, again, being aware of the connectivity and access points is critically important.
Richard Newton, help Rochesterians see that perhaps these issues extend to other cities where you have worked. I mean, these challenges of access, just having a waterfront isn't automatic for creating a gathering place, a place for development. What are some of the maybe some of the challenges that you think do travel from place to place with waterfronts, and what can Rochesterians learn?
Well, I think that going back to what I was saying earlier, the whole commercial use of waterfronts tended to mean that they were kind of leftover spaces. And so often, and this is exactly what Maria was talking about in Cornhill, is that when you have Exchange Boulevard going along the front, that is a great separator. And in Philadelphia, we have I-95 disconnecting the main fabric from the Delaware River. There are now very wonderful proposals for bridging over it to create a series of public spaces that connect through. Baltimore, another city I work in, was one of the few cities where they were able to not have the main road running across in front of the riverfront. So a lot of it is, as Maria said, talking about how you connect across, but traffic calming, trying to create roads that have multiple crosswalks, give people a reason for actually going there and making it safe for them to get there is a critical thing that cities need to really focus on.
Yeah, you mentioned I-95 Philadelphia, and knowing that there are perhaps exceptions or we're overgeneralizing, but I do want to ask you, Richard, you know, this is a community that recently filled the eastern third of its inner loop. We are talking about doing more, and there are challenges in Syracuse, in other cities across the country, the way highways and certain car-centric travel has divided certain communities. Are you generally in favor of some of these movements and these efforts to, for at least from the position of those things as a fix, to fix some of those errors of the past?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's fundamental. It requires an incredible amount of investment, as we saw in, you know, Boston's Big Dig and other cities. But the value that sort of starts to prioritize open space, pedestrians, cyclists, and the use of the public realm is really a major, I think, initiative that cities should be focusing on going forward.
Michael writes to us to say, High Falls worked for a while when Frontier Field opened in 1996 and when the Rhinos were drawing big crowds, but then the East End became the place to be on Friday and Saturday nights. It didn't help that downtown Rochester is a maze of one-way streets. That's an interesting last line there, because that's a question that would travel to other cities. So I'll ask both of you, and I'll start with Richard. One-way streets, are they a problem, generally speaking, for development and for drawing crowds and linking communities, or is that not what you've experienced?
Oh, I would say one-way streets particularly are, I mean, generally the reason why you make them one-way is because you want to speed traffic through, so you're increasing traffic speeds, you're really thinking of the car first. And I think the major initiatives that are happening in so many enlightened cities is now that streets are about pedestrians, they're about transit, they're about cars, they're about delivery, but they're multifunctional. They're all about many different uses. And as soon as you start to see a street as multifunctional, you're taking away one of those fundamental roles of it as being part of the public realm, part of the public pedestrian connective tissue that really gives life to a city.
How do you feel, Maria, about one-way streets?
Yeah, no, it would be great to be able to convert all one-way streets back to two-way streets. It's important to slow down the traffic. It's important because they tend to be disorienting. So for some people, you know, you need to turn left, but you can't, and then you don't know where to go next. And so for that fact, also, it's a bit of a problem. But as Richard said, it tends to facilitate traffic moving quickly. And in urban spaces, we really need to make sure that the pedestrian has safe access to all places.
844-295-TALK, listeners, if you want to join the program as we talk about what draws us to the waterfront, Rock the Riverway, design challenges, and more. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org, which Paul has done. He writes, recently I walked along the new bridge from Court Street by Dinosaur Barbecue over toward the new development on South Avenue. Most interested in finally connecting the river trail in this area, and all of a sudden realized what I believe will be the creation of a cantilevered grandstand overlooking the old canal feeder and the river and dams, similar to settings I saw on the High Line in New York City. Oh my goodness, what a place that will be, he says, especially in the afternoon sun and during firework displays. About to finally give up my sailboat, I can't wait for this to be finished so I can get a regular fix of water therapy. So walkable, I would spend many afternoons there. That's from Paul. Maria, I'm not sure about the cantilevered grandstand. I haven't seen it yet,
but the part of that project was to be able to create this connector. So it looks like it's going to be in place and hopefully will be open soon.
Richard, you know, he concludes there by saying, so walkable, I'll spend many afternoons there. And then he adds this. He says, and we're getting closer to being able to bike continuously from the Pennsylvania border to Lake Ontario and Buffalo to Albany. So are we reaching a point in the design of cities in this country where we are bringing, that it's not just a trend that there is pedestrian focus, walkability, bike access, multimodal, sort of ethos? Is there any chance that urbanism is a fad, or do you think that permanently going forward, this multimodal thread will always be an important factor?
Well, I would add, I think absolutely, I don't think it's a fad at all. I think it's something that is a broader recognition of how people should live in cities, that cities can be very healthy. Being outside is something that walking to work, cycling to work is all about a much healthier lifestyle. And we've become so sedentary. I always love the phrase that we're generating a whole generation of screen ages, that they are a generation that sits in front of screens. And one of my fundamental roles as a landscape architect working within the urban realm is to get people to engage face-to-face in public, in safe, secure, stimulating public spaces so that we can then start to communicate face-to-face. And that seems to be something that is one of the fundamental goals of what we do as sort of civic designers.
Yeah, I don't know why this is the first time I've ever heard the term screenagers.
I like that.
I've never heard that, but it makes total sense. I also think, Richard, and I'm gonna ask you to think about American ballpark design, because I think of American city and sort of landscape architecture planning in the same way that I think about, this is sort of a strange analogy, but baseball stadiums. So in the 1970s, especially, late 60s, 70s, 80s, American stadiums were cookie cutter, often with fake turf. Everything looked the same, boring cement, sort of character-free duds. And then in Baltimore, Camden Yards opens in, I think, 93 or 94. In Cleveland, my hometown, Jacobs Field opens in 94. And the notion of character, of nuance, of interesting design, of different sight lines comes back. And we're never going back to the 70s, 80s cookie cutter. And in some weird way, I feel like American cities are kind of that way, that for a long time, it was automobile-centric. It all looked the same. It was sort of Samesville, USA. In my mind, there is a parallel there. Is that off out of, well, I was going to say out of left field. That is a really lame pun. But is there something to that?
I think there's absolutely something to it. I think that the Camden Yards was an incredibly enlightened way of bringing people back downtown. But one also needs to be very careful that when you create such a massive attraction where you have whole crowds of people that come there, it needs to be somewhere that is planned at a finer grain, so it isn't just empty when there is no game on, or when there is no when there's no game on. It needs to be have a finer grain, so there need to be other activities that maintain people within that area, so it doesn't become a sort of dead zone when there aren't games. I think that's an important consideration in any piece of urban design, that you have to look at it throughout the year, throughout the week, and throughout the day.
Well, Joel writes to us to say, one of my problems with Rock the Riverway are that the proposals begin downtown, and with the larger neighborhood areas coming second or third, by which time we might have run out of any kind of money to finish phases 2 and 3. Downtown is great, but it is not the only place we need to focus on. Maria, what do you think of Joel's comments there?
Well, that may be true. We did, at the same time that Rock the Riverway was being put together by the city, there was a Genesee Land Trust was working at identifying river stakeholders and started to organize and host a consortium of people that were interested in the river. And that consisted of anybody that had contact on the river from the canal all the way to the lake. So kind of taking, again, a little bit of a broader view and trying to help bring understanding to all of these needs. How are these neighborhoods impacted, the neighborhoods that are along the river? How can some of the resources that are coming to downtown help, or how can some of these neighborhoods benefit from some of these resources? I mean, one of the top goals is job creation. So this whole idea of equitable design, it's not enough to just attract jobs, but are those jobs the kind of jobs that can be filled by the people that are living in close proximity? And that takes another layer of intentionality, but it's definitely absolutely necessary, looking at the statistics that we have currently with our poverty rates and segregation. We have to very intentionally bring jobs back into the neighborhoods that can be filled by the people that live in those communities. There's this River Alliance. I don't know that it has a formal name, but it has been being hosted by the Genesee Land Trust currently. And it exists to help inform and collaborate with other groups. So it's not just something all by itself, but it hopes to be able to provide some support services to Rock the Riverway, but also to exist as a bridge between the municipalities and the communities.
Well, Richard, to Joel's point there, the concern that downtown gets all of the focus, we could expand that concern much beyond the notion of Rock the Riverway. There is a concern in this community, just as I imagine there is in others, where development in, sort of in replanning and redesigning and revitalizing American cities, the notion that downtown feels a little bit upscale, white-centric, not all that inclusive, and maybe not all that linked to other parts of a city, whether it's Rochester or others, that might be struggling. And I think that's at the core of what Joel is saying, and I think it's a good concern to keep in mind. How much do we see that concern in other cities, and what can we do about it?
Well, I certainly see it in many cities. I'm working at the moment in Wilmington in Delaware, And there is a their sort of central square, which is called Rodney Square, is a remarkable, wonderful piece of early 20th century planning. And we've been working with the mayor and the governor and the local not-for-profit that is the Conservancy to develop a plan for it, which we're characterizing it as an urban square, as a sort of backyard for the whole community, because there are large economically disadvantaged members of the community that live quite close by. And the fact that this is a space that is for the whole city, it will make it a more attractive place to get new employees to the major businesses. But at the same time, it will be a place that anybody can use. And this equitable access is a really important part of what we as landscape architects do, working in communities throughout the states. But I particularly work in a number of communities within Philadelphia, where we're trying to make sure that everyone has equal access to good, healthy, open, green space throughout the city, especially in some of the more economically disadvantaged areas in the city.
Maria, how much do you think in the last several years we've seen conversations regarding equitable design vis-a-vis 10 years ago? It's a big change, isn't it?
Big change. And it's and frankly, in the situation we're in currently in Rochester, we have to take those extra steps to really be thoughtful about development without displacement is becoming kind of a catchphrase. But creating the policies that will help bring resources to the community without displacing the existing population. Cities need people to live in them. So that was step one. We're having an exploding population downtown right now. But we also need to be very attentive to all the people that have lived downtown and the neighbors, the neighborhoods around it that are seeing incredible challenges and how we can help them.
Yeah, producer Megan Mack, I'm looking through the glass asking, development without displacement is a conversation that's going to happen on this program tomorrow. So there we go. A lot of the similar themes and a vitally important theme here in Rochester. Okay, so let's turn a little bit to, I want to talk to Richard Newton a little bit about the work that's happening in Alexandria in just a second here, but I got a question from a listener named Adam who was asking, said, missed the comments earlier, what's happening in Charles Carroll Park, said that that was a part of the conversation, came in a little late. Richard Newton can help with that. So tell us a little bit about plans for Charles Carroll Park and what's happening there, Richard, and some of the work that's being done.
Well, there should be the proverbial shovel in the ground toward the end of the year. We've been working hard with the city, with T.Y. Lin, the prime engineer and architect in Rochester, along with Highland Planning, who did quite a lot of outreach at the beginning of the project. This is a project that we've been working on since 2015, I recall, and the city have been very interesting in the sense that the project was put slightly on hold while they were trying to get more money, because they realized that from the public outreach that connectivity was such a critical part of the project. So rather than just being a project that developed the area over the old Crossroads Garage, they're now looking at how they can make better connections to State Street, to Main Street, to the St. Paul area, and obviously to Andrews Street as well, so that it is both a project that is completely transforming the space over the garage, but it's making important connections so that it's much more visible, much more accessible to the surrounding pedestrian networks.
And so within, you know, as you say, sort of shovels in the ground, perhaps by end of the year, we should see in maybe 2 or 3 years, I'm going to go for a walk from High Falls over to St. Paul and Fifth Frame, and I'm going to get an afternoon coffee, and I'm going to see what's going on there. What's it look like, Richard, in maybe 3 years from now?
Well, and this is what you'll hear on next Wednesday, because one of the ideas behind the title Drawn to Water is how we, as landscape architects and urban designers, think about remaking public space in the contemporary city. So I'll be showing Alexandria, I'll be showing Charles Carroll Park, but what we evolved through was a series of approaches that really reached into the history and the culture of Rochester. And eventually it became clear that what people wanted was, dare I say, a little a part of nature within the city, so that what you'll see there is a lot more green spaces that people can hang out at lunchtime, places that will be shady, much more of a one might say a sort of a almost a sort of Genesee Valley type of planting, as well as being programmed and well maintained throughout the year. So there will always be something going on there to keep the residents and workers in downtown occupied. It will be a real destination.
So Maria Frigiuelli, you know, I'm not at all joking when I say on nice days, WXXIers love to get out, walk from High Falls. We love to walk High Falls. We love to head over to the brewery across the bridge, but we also like to kind of swing around and go into the St. Paul corridor. I see a lot of hope for that corridor, St. Paul. But with Charles Carroll, it seems to be maybe a little bit of linkage, maybe a little bit of a kind of a missing piece before things really take off. At least that's my hope, and I have a bias. I work down here. I'd love to see that happen. But do you think that that's kind of a missing piece that can kind of revitalize this corridor?
Oh, absolutely. Considering it as a connector is important to really developing it. And then the other point that I think is really critically important is it. Design is critical. Good design is good business. That's my new tagline. And oftentimes we discard design because budgets don't allow for what is often considered the fluff. But when you have a challenging space like this space because of its change in elevation, being over parking garage and other challenges, design is really what is needed to create that connectivity and to create those special spaces.
I'll tell you what we need is more parking spaces. Do you agree?
So we, you know, cities, as I said, need residents. But the one thing, as we look at economic development, the best way to achieve economic development, in my opinion, is to dedicate more money to sidewalks and multimodal opportunities.
I thought you were going to see huge oceans of above ground parking.
So hopefully, you know, contrary to every business owner wanting to have a parking space in front of their business, doing the opposite has really proven in other cities to be wildly successful.
And let me say also, because I'm sort of trolling and being a bit of a jerk about this, and I don't mean to be, because I know there are a lot of businesses that get frustrated. They feel like, hey, we need parking. Rochester's problem is probably a lot of cities' problem, which is you've got parking. Is it in the right places? Do businesses feel like you can access? But what Maria's saying is, look, cultural shift here. This is going to work for everybody, for the businesses too, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Go ahead, Richard. Yeah, please.
I was just going to add one point, a couple of little insights. One statement I love from somebody who used to run the parking authority in Philadelphia said that their sole role in life was to make pedestrians. In other words, that if by providing parking spaces, people would park and then they would become pedestrians and move through the city. The other piece, which I always think is rather wonderful, is a traffic consultant we work with that all talked about this sort of concept of park once. In other words, you do drive to the city, but then you park once, and then because of the powerful attractiveness of the pedestrian network, people didn't want to jump back in their cars again. They could go and visit restaurants, the theater, the galleries, and all the various places they wanted, walking or of course, cycling now. So the idea that you just go there, you park once in a place that is well connected to the rest of the city through a good pedestrian infrastructure is a critical objective that cities should be embracing.
All right, let's get to Carlene after the break. So stay right there, Carlene. This is our only very short break. You're hearing Richard Newton on the line with us, a partner at Olin Landscape Architecture and his firm. He's very familiar with Rochester. He's been doing work on Charles Carroll Park. He has family connections here in Rochester, and joining us for the hour with Maria Frigiuelli, the executive director of the Community Design Center, because it is next Wednesday, 1 week from today. That's March 27th, 7 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium in Rochester. Richard's going to be here for a conversation about Drawn to Water, Design Stories of City and River. Great perspective on the work that's happening here in Rochester and also the work that's happened in other cities and maybe lessons to learn. Now, individual seats are free. There's a suggested donation of $10. That is next Wednesday, 7 p.m. at Gleason Works in the ongoing Reshaping Rochester series. Let's get that break and more of your feedback next.
I'm Megan Mack. Thursday on The Next Connections, we continue our series of conversations with Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalists who are graduates of RIT. They join us to talk about how their medium is changing and how newsrooms are changing. Then in our second hour, Development Without Displacement. It's a preview of a local gentrification conference. We'll talk about what urban planners and landscape architects need to know. Talk to you Thursday.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Carlene in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Carlene.
Yes, as a lifelong resident of Rochester, I remember when there was much, much more that was developed and then disappeared because it wasn't coordinated. It came 10 years here, 10 years there. But the geography is what people seem to overlook, which we have a gorge from the falls down for many, many miles, and no one has ever been able to get RD&E to give up the land where the defunct BB station was, which would make a wonderful, wonderful park and or event site. If we could only get them to give up those acres right there near the new MCC, the old Kodak Park, no one ever looks at that. And I'm wondering why they're untouchable.
Okay.
Can you give me an answer?
Yeah, Carlene, thank you. Maria, do you want to take a shot of that first?
Well, I know that Greentopia has been very, very actively involved in all things that surround High Falls and trying to create an interesting place around it. And they have had conversations with RG&E and the city. And I think that's something that has been identified as a wonderful opportunity for our city, going back as far as 2000, when in community design charrettes that we were helping to facilitate, that need was identified. So hopefully with Rock the Riverway, there might be some incentive on the city's part to create this wonderful urban space, and from RG&E's part as a community partner to provide it. Who knows? There's a lot more awareness around it now, and certainly the parcel, because it is a contaminated site, needs or has to go through some remediation. So that is also something that takes, unfortunately, much longer than one would wish.
Okay. John in Rochester. Next. Go ahead, John.
Hi. I'm one of the co-founders of the Rochester Cycling Alliance. I want to point out that a walkable, cyclable connection between High Falls and downtown Rochester is the great missing link. And unless I've missed something, it's not being addressed. You have to go out to St. Paul, whereas we have this urban waterfall, which is unsurpassed in the country, which connects to a gorgeous river. And yet there are overpasses, underpasses, and train rails that make it difficult, but not impossible if we were ambitious and serious about bridging that gap in the city.
Okay. John, thank you. Richard, I know you're familiar with many parts of Rochester. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, having spent some wonderful evenings on the brewery roof staring over to the High Falls, I can I would love to have been able to cycle there and not walk under that the dreadful bridge and the long I guess the idea of dropping the inner loop or trying to remove that and make that much more connected really is an incredible future opportunity. But yes, I can't agree more than to make those connections by cycle and pedestrian would really start to open up the riverway and those connections.
Maria, do you think it's at least partially about the cost involved here with making this kind of change?
For the bike, yeah, to create the bike link?
Everything to make it connected there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we were talking earlier, that everything has to be looked at as a system. And the way we do things, we're kind of doing things piecemeal because of budgetary constraints, because of the way opportunities for funding kind of occur. But as long as there's a plan in place that tells us where we're going, then we can kind of look at that and see how much of a priority that is and when the opportunity comes up that can happen. But I don't know that it's a high priority right now.
All right. So in our remaining minutes, I want to ask Richard Newton about this stretch of maybe 1.2 miles and, you know, multi-decade vision to revitalize a waterfront, a riverfront that's disconnected from the city, compromised in places by past industrial use. And if it sounds like Rochester, we're talking Alexandria in Virginia. What have you done to make that finally actually start to happen, that things are happening there, that you've got this 20-year vision, and you not only are making things happen, but you're making sort of the stakeholders are not just developers. They're people who live there, who want to be there, who maybe have different economic means. How have you pulled that together, Richard?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that we are part of a large team that comprises both city agencies, its engineers, its community outreach. It's never any one piece. And I think that the important part is that there is a collective will to make this happen. And the one thing you may have alluded to, but the whole project, one of the reasons why it is taking such a long time is that the whole waterfront is being lifted up by a number of feet for flood protection, because the majority of the site, in fact, all of the site is on fill. From 1749, gradually the riverbank was filled and filled and filled. And so what we're having is the river trying to reclaim. So there have been quite a number of flooding events. So one of the major motivations behind it is to lift it up and provide flood protection to that edge. But the simple answer to your question is a lot of people coming together, realizing that they can solve issues by working together rather than fighting each other.
I have really enjoyed reading about sort of the project with all the different sort of passive and active use outdoor rooms along the Potomac, the yeah. pedestrian promenade. So, you know, is this part of something that springs from your vision, from collaborative work there? How does that come together?
Well, it's absolutely a collaborative vision, but at the same time, as the landscape architects, one of our roles is to really give concrete form to all the aspirations and all the expressions. So the public outreach yielded a whole lot of many different things that they wanted the riverfront to be. And so we've been, I believe, successful working with our partners to be able to, as it were, encapsulate that in an actual proposal. And what is wonderful at the moment is that within the next few months, a new I'd say a temporary pop-up, which will be there for about 10 years, there's going to be a new park. It's under construction at the moment at the end of King Street where it meets the riverfront. Is going to be a new park that we've developed. So the idea that a project that takes 20 years in its making, by creating an installation that will start to get people interested in using the river in new ways, is a way of overcoming that sort of sense of delayed gratification, which is really a product of the difficulty of making these things work. So advanced projects, pop-ups, are things that really help establish that sort of use and excitement about a project.
And listeners, if you want to check it out, there's a lot to see online about what's going on at the waterfront in Alexandria, Virginia. Really neat stuff. But before I let you go, Richard, I'm thinking of a site in downtown Rochester that's about an acre large, and I'm contractually obligated to ask you, as someone who's familiar with Rochester and as a landscape architect, if you have followed what's going on with something called Parcel 5, and if you have any thoughts about either public use or any of the other ideas there. Now, you can absolutely beg off this question, but I have to ask you.
Well, thank you for asking. I will defer that to Maria. I think that, I would always tend to advocate a public use for a downtown area, but at the same time, it's always a very complex argument about how much, how much money, dare I say, can a site be developed can it generate to invest in other areas? So there's a very careful balance, and cities are in a very difficult situation as they try to wrestle with these, as you were talking about earlier on at the beginning of the conversation. But Maria?
Well, you know, certainly we're very excited about the opportunities that Parcel 5 presents, and most importantly, we want to emphasize the fact that having an in-depth engagement process and a transparent process will be, I think, the best way to determine what may happen on Parcel 5. So there's no hurry. We have a lot of wonderful projects and things going on throughout the city, so we hope that the city will take its time and allowing this to develop in a way that is going to be the best all around from the community's perspective as well as from the city's perspective.
Well, that is certainly a conversation that will continue on Connections in various ways in the future. I want to thank Richard Newton, our guest on the line, who's really sounds to me very much like a Rochesterian. He's a partner at Olin Landscape Architecture, but with family connections here and work at Charles Carroll Park, among other places, he knows so much about our city, and we're looking forward to seeing Richard next Wednesday, March 27th, 7 p.m. at the Gleason Works Auditorium. So 1 week from tonight, individual seats are free. They suggest a donation of $10 for Richard's presentation, Drawn to Water, Design Stories of City and River. See you here in Rochester, Richard. Thank you for the time this hour.
Thank you.
Wonderful conversation, Maria Frigiuelli. Thank you, Executive Director of the Community Design Center. We will see you again soon. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And our thanks to John Andrus, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Happy spring. Hope you're enjoying it. And we'll talk to you Thursday on member-supported public radio.